Is it accurate then that you are not actually transmitting a carrier in CW until you actually tap that key for a dot or a dash? Because that continuous wave, maybe it's an accurate or an inaccurate description, kind of led me to believe you're constantly maybe sending a carrier and then just modulating it. That's what I really want to get clear on here.
And 2KW.
Okay, Alan recognized. Just want to put in my two cents that a constant carrier, constant wave, is on key down. The quality of the carrier wave doesn't change when you're keyed down, but when you key up, it stops. So it's off on, off on, off on. So it's not really a constant carrier signal. It is an intermittent constant carrier signal, if you will. But Alan.
Yep, that's absolutely correct. Another name for A1, which is CW, another name for A1 is on-off keying, which says it all. What you're thinking of, where there's a carrier, and the CW is modulated on the carrier, is called MCW, and that's A2. Not A1, and there is such a thing as MCW. If you wanted to do CW practice on the repeater, you could just key your handy talkie and key an oscillator into the handy talkie, and it would make tones on the repeater. You'd be sending CW via the repeater, but it's not CW, it's MCW. Let me let it drop. Now, to visualize duty cycle, pretend that somebody is switching the lights in the room on and off 100 times a minute. So fast that you can't really see it going on and off. But the room got dimmer, didn't it? You think that it gets half as dim, but actually it gets about a third as dim. That's because of mathematics. But that's not the point. The point is that the duty cycle of that light bulb is much lower when it's being keyed on and off than when it's on constantly. And the duty cycle of a linear amplifier that's transmitting radio teletype is much higher than one transmitting CW because it's always on. Go ahead, Eddie.
Okay, I'm a little confused, Alan. I keep on hearing about Eddie. I don't know which Eddie we're talking about. Last time I asked Eddie to answer, I got no response, and this time you got no response. So who is this Eddie guy?
Eddie.
I thought it was the guy on Echolink with the question about duty cycle.
Oh, that's John N2ZC. Okay, one sec. Let the repeater rest for a little bit. If John wants to make a comment, he'll have the opportunity.
Yeah. You know, the comment I want to make is, first of all, thank you, Roy, for running this net. And the other station, I didn't catch your call sign, who gave that excellent explanation. And that, Roy, you also give these excellent, you know, explanations to all of us and your patients. Much appreciated. I have a much better picture of it, and I'm going to leave it at that. I do have much more to grab onto, and as always, you know, I think most of us get so much out of it. So thank you again.
You're welcome, John. Anytime we can clear up misunderstandings. There's so many aspects to this hobby. And occasionally, an incorrect fact kind of lodges itself in the collective consciousness of us amateur radio operators. So I welcome your participation, Wesley. I assume you wanted a response. So in what way? I think your response was to ask the other guys what they think of what I answered.
Yes, the only thing is... Hold on. Yes, the only thing is that that I use improper form in English, and it sounds like it's demanding instead of being just a question, but thank you for correcting me, Dr. Ray. What I was confused with is, based what you said, that's what you said, maybe I understood it wrong. Okay, we have unmodulated carrier, uninterrupted. Okay, actually we interrupt that. So we have A1, which is unmodulated CW. And then I understood that you said we have a lower sideband and upper sideband. If we're doing so, I would like to have a comment of Alan and Rich towards that. Because I'm completely confused with that. And to actually...
GD2FRU?
Yes, George.
No, Wesley, we're not interrupting the continuous wave. We're producing the continuous wave on and then off. It's off. We produce it on and let it go off.
I agree. That depends from point of view. If you had it on and then you switch it off, then you're interrupting it. If you had it off, but at first you start to make it on, then you're making it on. But my question was, is unmodulated carrier creating side waves, sidebands, and to exit?
So I assume you want George and Alan to answer that question of yours.
KD2FRU?
Yes, George.
If you're not producing the carrier, you are not producing the sidebands. Because keep in mind, sidebands are produced when you suppress carrier. So you have, the transmitter has to actually have carrier, and then you suppress carrier and put the modulated sideband signal out. So you got to produce the signal first. You're not just saying that the signal is always there and you're taking away from it. You have to bring the signal up, put the information on it.
I'm sorry, N2KW, I have to disagree.
Okay, Alan, please feel free.
Okay. You say that the only way that you put the sidebands on the signal is when you suppress the carrier. Tell me, does an AM signal have sidebands?
Both sidebands. The AM signal is a carrier, and you actually ride two sidebands on the AM signal. If you want to work sideband, you suppress the AM signal.
No. Listen, you're confusing three separate things, upper sideband, lower sideband, and carrier. You said there are no sidebands until you suppress the carrier, and I said that's not so. And my question was, does an AM signal have sidebands?
No, I did not say there are no sidebands until you suppress the carrier. You have sidebands, and then you suppress the carrier for the receiver to interpret the sidebands. Now, you just reversed what I said.
Okay, you'd be a whole lot better if you turned off the receiver and just looked at the pan adapter.
NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
Good evening, everyone. Now, CW, pure key on, I guess theoretically doesn't have sidebands. However, it's my understanding that different rates of CW, when you're actually sending, say Morse code, the faster you're sending, the more bandwidth is required. So I assume there are some sidebands on a rapid keyed on and keyed off CW wave.
And to exceed.
Wesley, recognize, and I would agree with you, Lou. Basically, the laws of physics. If you're going to increase the symbol rate, you got to pay for it somehow. So if you're just keeping the key down and not doing anything, you're not adding any information, symbol rate approaches zero, bandwidth approaches zero. As you increase the symbol rate, you have to increase the bandwidth to carry that information. What it is the aspect of the off-on transitions and the rate of the off-on transitions are producing that widened bandwidth. But it's just the nature of symbol rates. You have to pay for it in bandwidth.
And 2KW.
Okay, unfortunately, Alan, there was someone who came before you, so the person who came before you that I completely blanked out on is next, and then Alan follows him.
I think it might have been me, Roy, WTPC.
Okay, Rich, take it away then.
Okay, to interrupt the current thread, but to ask another question is, why is lower sideband used on 80 and 40, and I guess 160, and upper sideband on the rest of the lower band?
Okay, once again, I will give you my understanding, could be wrong, that it's just a gentleman's agreement. They could have chosen anything. There's nothing inherently better about one versus the other, but if people out there know better than me, feel free to correct me.
And 2KW.
Okay, Alan?
Yeah, the first sideband rigs, W2EWL, is cheap and easy, SSB, or the Central Electronics 10A and 20A, and so on and so forth, use the Heterodyne system and 5 megahertz VFO. And so anything that was below 5 megahertz was lower sideband, and everything that was above 5 megahertz was upper sideband.
Oh, okay, that's a good reason, and it just kind of got fixed into the furniture. I've occasionally passed by people who, I don't know what they were on, but they were operating on the wrong sideband for some strange reason. That's a good historical reason.
Yeah, people sometimes operate on the wrong sideband during a contest to indicate that they're not participating in the contest. But getting back to the bandwidth question, I think we all agree that the higher the rate of information exchange, the more bandwidth you require. I think we all agree with that. The only question is the bandwidth of a CW signal is much narrower than you think it is. It's under 100 hertz. No matter how fast you send, it's under 100 hertz. What filter you use in the receiver and what you like in your ear has absolutely nothing to do with the transmitted signal, which is why I said turn off the receiver and just look at the pan adapter. Go ahead, Reg.
Okay, Alan, now you got me confused again. I'm assuming you meant me. My name is Roy, because I don't know who Reg is.
I think he's friends with Eddie.
Wow. Yeah, I'm sorry, Roy. I said Rich and I meant Roy.
Okay, very good. I don't know. I think we're kind of kicking at that horse at this point, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, just as long as people don't think it's 2.2 kilohertz bandwidth. You can't have a CW signal. That's why. That's that why. It's not possible.
K2STP.
Yes, Chris.
Thanks, Roy. A question on this is, so I understand it's the faster you go, the more bandwidth you're going to use on a CW signal. What is making you use more bandwidth from let's say, RF standpoint? In other words, is it the transmitter ramping up and it's changing its frequency before it gets centered to where it wants to be? Or what exactly is it? What's making it use more bandwidth just because you're going faster?
NY2H.
Lou recognized, just want to put in my 2 cents, where it's the transition from 0 to 1. You don't want a square wave. A square wave is very rich in harmonics, and so there are filters that filter the square wave into a much more agreeable curve, but you are still somewhat nonlinear at these transition points. And the more transition points per second, the more sideband frequencies you're generating off on either side. At least that's the way I think of this. Lou, give me your opinion.
Ditto.
Okay, very good. So we're very great. Great minds think alike, Lou.
Yeah, so, you know, if the square wave is truly square, right, it generates harmonic. Now, they decrease, you know, as you go away from them, but hey, the math will show you. So the statement that you can't exceed 100 hertz is probably not theoretically true, or maybe practically it is true.
And to exceed?
Yes, Wesley recognized. Yeah, I just wanted to point out, I didn't give a magic number. It's to me, it's an interesting aspect of symbol rate. It's not something that really affects anyone. I don't know of anyone who adjusts their filters as they speed up their transmissions. Most people can't send CW at these semi-ridiculous rates that would warrant anything like that. So I didn't bring out the actual numbers. I didn't suggest that the actual numbers would mean that much. It's just the characteristic that interested me. But over to the person who just put out their call.
Yeah, but would you say, no, the attribution wasn't to what you said, it was to what the other fellow, KW, said.
Okay. Again, I'm trying to balance too many plates. Who wanted to talk next? Was it Wesley?
That's correct.
Okay, Wesley.
I'm an old school, and for me today's discussion is kind of revelation. I'm very agree with Alan, and as far as the typical average bandwidth of CW is 5 to 600 hertz. But as far as revelation about the upper and lower sideband in CW, the guy's got me. Yeah, let me jump. Okay. In radio communication, sideband is a band of frequencies higher than or lower than the carrier frequency. And there are the results of the modulation process. In CW, unmodulated, we have no modulation. We have interrupted carrier, or we have a carrier that we produce when it's not there. Depends what was first. Let me drop.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
I think the easiest way to deal with this is to consider that keying is the modulation.
And to KW?
Yes, Alan.
I didn't make this up. I think Wayne Green made it up. But boy winks, girl smiles. That's modulation in action. Modulation is simply the superimposition of information on a carrier, which in this case, with the boy and the girl, would the carrier's light. Wouldn't you agree, Roy?
Yes, I would. Matter of fact, I've been talking about symbol rates and information theory for the last half hour here.
Okay, I just want to say again, I want to restate once again, with the CW signal, no matter how fast somebody's sending, I'd be very surprised if they were over 100 hertz wide. I could move in 125 hertz from the strongest signal on the band, and I don't hear them at all. You're confusing the receiver filter with the bandwidth of the transmitted signal. Turn the receiver off and look at the pan adapter. Go ahead, Roy.
Okay, very good. I would assume that that was directed to George, because George was the one talking about these aspects. I have done that many times. I have a flex with a pan adapter, and you can sit there and you can watch it bob back and forth, and it leaves a little trail, and you can see the Morse code, so it's real cute.
Okay. Answer again. So we were talking about the sideband. The sidebands carry information transmitted by the radio signal. The sidebands comprise of the spectral components of the modulated signal, except the carrier. The carrier is a different entity. It's there, but it's a different entity. It is not the lower sideband and not the upper sideband. And CW signals are not transmitted by those sidebands, nor the upper one, nor the lower one. A CW signal is approximately a single frequency with only additional bandwidth required to allow key up and key down transitions. By that, you cannot have a lower lobe and upper lobe. And I don't see that on my oscilloscope. I'm sorry, on my spectrum analyzer. But I do see a single sideband. And the key is, the problem that I'm having in here is that Dr. Roy introduced a modulation in unmodulated signal that is just interrupted. It's an information, it's not the modulation. It's an information. But I would love Alan to correct me in this matter. Dr. Roy.
Okay, I'll turn it over and have Alan explain it to you. Again, modulation is information. It's changing amplitude, it's changing phase, it's changing frequency of any RF carrier, as John KD2BD is writing in the chat room and such, and I agree with him entirely.
All right.
The amount, the bandwidth, we've all kind of come to the agreement, hopefully, that as you increase the symbol rate, you increase the bandwidth of the signal. It's not as severe as audio does to single sideband or to amplitude modulation. So you're just going to see that the signal has a certain given width. It's not going to be the typical upper sideband, lower sideband carrier configuration. But it is if you see someone sending 5 words per minute and another person sending 50 words per minute, there will be a slight widening in the bandwidth of the faster transmitted signal. So I think the rest of this is just kind of down a rabbit hole, personally. But Alan, did you want to answer Wesley?
Yeah, actually I did. Okay. Forget about CW for a minute. It's very narrow. But you're right. The more information you put on the signals, the more bandwidth you take up. We're on FM, and we're taking up 5 kilohertz on FM. And CW takes up 100 hertz. And an AM signal, theoretically, takes up 6 kilohertz, which means that a single sideband signal takes up half of that, takes up 3 kilohertz. And I don't know if you realized it or not, but it's possible to have different information on an upper sideband and on a lower sideband on the same frequency. Hams don't do it, but it's possible. Over. Roy, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Alan. AC2GS. No, I mean, I like I said, every so often I'll see some interesting character have their sideband in the wrong direction. And it's very visually obvious that you could have the same carrier frequency, and one can operate on upper, the other on lower, and they're not going to interfere with each other because they're on different frequencies. So, yeah, that's quite true. I don't think I've ever seen two people kind of get together and do that as an experiment, at least not for me to notice. But it becomes self-evident when you look
John,
at a pan adapter.
When somebody leaves a long enough pause, it'll come back up. WB2BX.
NY2H with a technical comment.
Yes, Lou.
All right. I've noticed that the people on Echolink can come in. They're not being blocked. I guess everybody's hearing that. So Frank and John have been talking back and forth and actually coming over the repeater. I'll have to check out the controller. That is not set correctly, but in any case, I think one of them, probably John is trying to get in.
Okay, I'll give them an opportunity in a second. What's happening is every so often the audio will time out and it loses the ability to realize the connection. And so when someone talks to another person on Echolink, rather than being blocked, the repeater doesn't understand that they're disconnected from each other and just broadcasts it. So that's why. What you also will notice is something like a 3 to 6 decibel volume gain in the person working the radio on the repeater, as well as the voice of the person on Echolink trying to talk to the other people on Echolink.
Precisely. But I'm wondering, so yeah, I probably have to adjust the timeout then, so I don't know if it's in the Echolink app or the controller. I'll look at both and try to equalize them maybe. Okay. Yeah, that's, may have heard it before, but now I understand it a little bit better on. Okay.
Okay, very good, Lou. Yeah, it's an ongoing problem, and I try to kick it back into existence. Usually what happens is enough people key one after the other, and that kind of knocks it back into working order. So you have to just unkey and rekey the repeater a few times. Anyway, for you guys in Echolink, in case one of you wanted to make a comment, I'm going to drop the push to talk and give the Echolink an opportunity to respond.
November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Yes, John.
You know, for me personally, this has just been a fabulous net, and I was in New York, been following this net since Dick, and you guys are just keeping up the tradition, and NK2W, thank you for your input and everybody else out there. Really been, for me, just such an informative night tonight. Just to switch gears real quick, anybody have any input on the Stepper IR? It's eventually I'm putting up a beam, I moved to Florida, and I don't know, I'm just leaning towards that Stepper IR. Anybody have any input?
2KW.
Okay, Alan, I have always been fascinated by Stepper products. For people out there who are unfamiliar, they have a very novel approach. They have a element that winds up and shorts itself, and so they have stepper motors that retract and leave out a certain length, and so they mechanically resonate their antennas instead of electronically resonating them by just mechanically changing the length. So, Alan, any experience or information on steppers?
Yep. Hands-on experience with the big IR at Kilo 6 November Delta, and personal experience there, and shared experience with a lot of other people who know antennas. And you already knew this, Roy. The more parts something has, the more likely something is going to fail.
Yeah, let me see if I have it. Yeah, that's the thing that always kind of struck me in the back of my head. It's you know, I really love innovative technology, and certainly it is, but it has a lot more parts, and a lot more parts, as you mentioned, can fail, especially, I don't know, what the cold does to these things. So, you know, it was just, I just found the idea, the concept to be somewhat fascinating. Did you experience any known failures along the way?
Well, Will burned out his balance, and it was like a 5KW balance. I don't know how you do that unless you're transmitting into a mismatch. But he thought he had a man. I don't know. I don't know. There have been failures. And it's a heavy thing to put up and take down, and it's hard to service in place. And let me let it drop, and then I'm going to go out on a limb here. Okay. Any horizontal antenna will not perform unless it's a half wavelength above ground, and doesn't really sing until it's a wavelength above ground. So you figure out what your band of interest is, and you know how hard the antenna has to be. That's on HF. That's not VHF. VHF, the higher the better. Line of sight. But on HF, it's about ground reflections and takeoff angle, and you really want it up a wavelength. And that's very hard to do, especially as you go down in frequency. A vertical antenna, the optimum height is with the feed point at a quarter of a wavelength. And I like a particular design called the four square, and I like a particular design called the half square. The half square is for people. The half square is for people whose shack is on the second floor, and they got a backyard. Perfect, perfect. And the four square is if you got enough room. The four square is really, really a good antenna. And I no longer aspire to a tower and a beam, Roy. Over.
Okay, it's good to hear that you found the sweet spot of antennas. You know, I mean, everyone's kind of searching for it. You got these contesting stations that spend semi-ridiculous sums of money putting up these enormous towers, these phased arrays, all kinds of, again, very fascinating things, but geez, expensive as heck. But so, I mean, getting back just to the Sepper IR, because John here is considering it, you think it just has too many moving parts to make it an optimum antenna design? That, you know, you believe in that there are better designs out there than something that uses servos and such?
In a word, yes. I'm on the multi-operator team at K1TTT. He's got 5 4-element beams on 10, 15, and 20. 5 separate 4-element beams on 10, 15, and 20. On 10 meters, the highest antenna is at 180 feet. He's got a 4-square on 40. He's got 2 4-element beams on 40, 90 feet and 180 feet. He's got a 4-square on 80. And he's got phased inverted L's on 160 with a full rosette of beverages. Over.
Okay, very good. Let's let the repeater drop for a second and let John get on and see if he has anything to say.
Yeah, you know, the input is invaluable because, you know, I'm only knowing what I'm reading, and now I'm hearing from NK2W actually has experience. So thank you, and I'm going to consider that. I'm going to reconsider, you know, my I was gravitating towards that, but it seems they don't have all the kinks, worked out in that. And just one quick comment I want to make is a while back I called Limewire, and I had, relayed some of the problems that we have here on Echolink. And, one of the comments that the gentleman made that I was very appreciative of, he says, you know, we do everything we can to support Roy because we appreciate all his efforts. And right now, the repeater, let me just unkey 1 minute. Yeah, right now the repeater, it's kicking in and out, it's doing all kinds of things, and these are very difficult issues, and I know that, but the content of what's being shared here is invaluable, and it's such a shame when some of it gets cut out. So whatever the technical team can do to improve that would be much appreciated, and that's it. And thank you again for that input, and I'm going to keep researching it, and you definitely, have swayed me.
KA2UTF.
2KW.
NY2H with an echo and technical comment.
Yes, Gary first, Alan second, and Lou third.
Yeah, good evening. I was just curious if you had time for another topic.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have time. We have one more subject after this. Wesley wants to discuss capacitive voltage dividers, but hopefully we'll have time before the end for another question, so I'll put you on the list, okay, Gary?
What I think, interaction, what I think I can move capacitive voltage dividers to the next TechNet, because ham radio questions should be primary into this repeater in importance, Dr. Roy.
Okay, thank you very much, Wesley. I do appreciate it. So, Gary, you're next on the list. I just want to get to the other people who threw out their call sign, and Lou wants to mention something about the Echolink. So, Alan next, and then Lou.
One more thing.
Yes, Wesley?
To the previous subject that was discussed, the conclusion is lobes in single sideband are the effect of the AM modulation. So AM modulation was first, the single sideband was just a variation of AM modulation, and we don't have lobes in FF modulation or a few other ways of modulating the signal. So, unmodulated EW doesn't have a lobes. There are no lobes. That was what I was taught. The lobes appear if you have AM modulation, but CW doesn't have AM modulation, so it doesn't have a lobes. Interesting.
Okay, it doesn't have discrete lobes, but there's a broadening of the bandwidth that's being transmitted. You know, whatever you want to call it, it widens the bandwidth of the transmission signal. So once again, Alan, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, actually, I have two things that I wanted to say. You can see on your PAN adapter how much spectrum a signal is using by how wide it is. Well, how thick it is, the line. The other thing that I wanted to address, the fellow that was considering the Step IR, I wonder, does he have a particular band of interest? Is he especially interested in one band or one mode? Roy, you give it to him.
Yes, thank you, Alan. So, John, N2ZC, you have a response? Okay, I waited for John. John, if you hear me out there, and to ZC, just wondering if you have a response for Alan. He was curious of what band you're interested, what situation you were thinking that the stepper would solve.
Yeah, and thank you very much there, Roy, for following up, and Alan for your inquiry. You know, I'm pretty much, you know, a low frequency operator. You know, I'm 40 meters, 20 meters, 15 meters, and you know, that 40 meter beam, you know, I retired, I'm in Florida, I could put it up. I got 5 acres here, and then I could, you know, use that for 15. Impedance match always has been, you know, we all analyze things. To me, it's always been in the forefront. Let me just drop 1 second. Yeah, impedance match, you know, just to get that power there, because, you know, I'm probably 50, 60-foot tower, you know, maybe 100 foot or more from the house, etc. You know, to conserve energy, you know, and not lose energy. So that stepper really, really intrigued me. But look, reality is what reality is. And, you know, and thank you for that input. And that's why I put that question out there. So, yeah, I'm basically a 40, 20, 15. I'm that old school. I built my first transmitter, and nothing like getting those far away distant contacts.
Okay, Roy, can I respond?
Certainly, Alan.
I'm going to make a specific recommendation for you because it's windy in Florida, and I understand what kind of
operation you like. You like the X-ing. I would suggest that you put up a four square for 40 meters. It's quite inexpensive and quite easy. And for 20 and above, put up a hex beam. Over.
Alan, I'm very sorry. Your transmission's cut in and out, and I don't know if it's on your side or this repeater, and believe me, I'm on the edge of my seat for whatever you have to say. Roy, can you repeat it?
Yes, I'll repeat it for you. I mean, keep in mind a bunch of things. We do stream the audio, and it shouldn't break up. At least I don't think it has. We also have an archive available at amateurradio.tv, usually a few days later. But he mentioned a four square for the 40-meter band and a hex beam for everything above it, 20 and up.
Okay, you know, what I'm getting here is, even in your transmissions, but nowhere near as much as in Alan's, is that in the middle of the sentence, I'm going to beep, and then it just cuts out. And then it'll continue, but there's this delay in there. And I don't know if it's on my side with the Echo Link or on the repeater side, but, you know, all this great contact. Don't want to miss any of it. So I got that. A four square for the 40 meter. And what were those ends for under that?
The other is a hex beam. You know, it's very, very, very popular. A hex beam for 20 and above.
Okay, you know what? I've got time. You know, new house, retired, a lot of work to do. That's going to be one of the last things, unfortunately. But, you know, in a way, it's good. It's going to give me time to do my research, and I'll do research on it and be back here with more questions.
Okay, very good. I wish you good luck. I was considering a hex beam once upon a time. I really wanted to be able to get to 40 meters, though, with that. And I was greedy. I wanted to see if I could get to 80, so that's what led me to a fan dipole in my particular case. But you know where to find us, and hopefully Alan will stick around as well. So we'll be here for you.
Thank you, and I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay, very good. Lou, you wanted to tell us something about Echo Link.
Yes. Let me see if I have it. Yes, I hear myself. Okay. All right, this is directed to John on Echo Link. So, first of all, I think it is on your end because I've been monitoring Echo Link, and it's been clear here. But, John, I want you to be aware. On your EchoLink application, there is a text page. In fact, Roy just texted the antenna information on that page. If you go to that page at any time and type the word break, the spelling B-R-E-A-K, your call will be announced over the air, despite who's speaking. And that gives us indication that you're on EchoLink and you are trying to get in. So, let me see if I can demonstrate here. So,
Y2H.
You should be hearing my call over the air. Well, you won't hear it on EchoLink, but everybody on the repeater should have heard it, despite the fact that the repeater is in use. So, bottom line, anytime, go to the text page or tab on your EchoLink app, type the word break, B-R-E-A-K, and your call will be announced. Regardless of who's speaking, and that'll give it the heads up that you're trying to get in.
R-B-P.
So, Marshall McLuhan said the medium is the message. You love the message. You asked for a little improvement in the medium, so I want you to be aware of this little feature.
Yeah, thank you very much. Just to clear that up, the tech link, is that on the... I'm on the Echo Link, obviously. Is that on the home page here, or do I have to go somewhere else?
All right. First of all, I see somebody else typing the word break, and I hope to dear God that this feature is still working. Roy, did you hear my call when I typed break?
I heard the very beginning, and then when you keyed up, it cut off.
I heard your whole call.
NY2H.
Okay, very good. So that's it. Yeah, we have a script from Jonathan Taylor that we added, the creator of Megalink, and that allows us to do this. So, John, that would be on the text page. I don't know if you're using a phone or a PC, but there should be another page available on that application where you can send text back and forth between anybody that's logged into Echolink. So it's that specific page where you'll type the word break, and you'll be heard regardless of repeater activity. You can even try it if you can find it, and we'll verify that we
N
hear your call.
N2RBC.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm on a PC, and I'm going to look for it. I mean, this is invaluable, and that's a text, I believe you're saying, T-E-X-T. And what is your call sign? Just in case I can't find it, I can get you after the net.
Okay, John, correction. It's not test. It's break. Bravo, Romeo, Echo, Alpha, Kilo. The word break. Bravo, Romeo, Echo, Alpha, Kilo. And I am NY2H, November Yankee 2 Hotel.
Okay, November 2 Yankee, November Yankee 2 Hotel. And you said that was in the tech link then, if I'm correct, correct?
I said, first of all, the word is break, B-R-E-A-K. And, for example, I'm using a phone app. So I have four tabs on the top. One is the normal one where you transmit your audio and receive. The second one is this text page. The third one is to look up various stations. And the fourth one is your favorite stations. So I think, if I remember, there's some similarity in the PC version. But there should be a text page in there. So you're going to have to find it. Maybe someone who's using that version can advise us how to get to it.
Okay, sweet, thank you. I'll definitely find it. Thank you very much. November 2, Zulu Charlie, and again, thanks to everybody out there. I'm listening.
Okay, very good, John. Thanks for participating, and I wish you luck with the antenna, and hopefully you'll tell us how everything goes. Gary, KA2UTF, you said you had a question?
Roger, KA2UTF. It has to do with signal fading.
N2RBB.
Which HF is most prone to signal fading of the frequencies. And it's, you know, conventionally understood to be a result of multipath and things like that, and shadowing, you know, because due to obstructions and things like that. But what is QSB, you know, in essence? In other words, where do these multipaths occur? You know, we know that they can be superimposed upon one another, and the receiver can either see reinforcement of, which would be like a positive reinforcement of the same signals, multiple copies of the same signal due to multipath, or destructive results, which would result in a deep fade of the signal. But what in essence is QSB? In other words, where do these multipaths originate? Is there some irregularity in the ionosphere which causes, say, signal scattering or differences in attenuation or in timing phase and all that? Can somebody give me, in a nutshell, the essence of QSB?
N2KW.
Okay, Alan recognized. Again, let me put in my 2 cents worth before Alan takes the stage. I think the best approach of looking at this to a degree is, you know, you see images of the ionosphere and you get this kind of image that it's a constant, consistent, hollow ball surrounding the Earth. I think it's better off thinking of it in terms of a raging river, with eddies and currents and all kinds of things. And depending upon where your RF is reflecting and refracting from it, causes it to go off at all kinds of interesting angles and can cause the Faraday rotation. I've told the story in the past. I used to be able to do diversity reception. I had a horizontally oriented antenna and a vertically oriented antenna, one in each ear. And I would talk occasionally to people, especially down in Florida, where I would hear Faraday rotation. If I only had a horizontal or a vertical antenna, it would sound just like routine QSP fade. But what was happening in my ears is his signal was going from my right ear to my left ear to my right ear to my left ear. So in his case, it was the ionosphere producing a very strange, variable Faraday rotation of the polarization angle. But Alan, it's your turn.
Oh, thank you for that, Roy. I never heard of that before, and I could see it. And that's wonderful. You know, great minds think alike. You were thinking of the river. I was thinking of the ocean or the bay. Just think of the bay on a stormy day where the water is upset. You know, it's not waves, but it's, you know, it's wavelets. And that's the way the ionosphere is, and you're bouncing a signal off that. And the signal could come down in various places, back and forth, and that's QSB. Forget about multipath. Multipath is a VHF phenomenon. It has nothing to do with HF at all. The best example of multipath is airplane flutter, if you know what airplane flutter is. Roy, go ahead.
Okay, very good explanation, Alan. I always like to be in agreement with you. So, Gary, your response?
Well, I thought that the receiver sees superposition of multiple copies of the same transmitted signal, each traversing a different path, as a cause of QSB, even on HF, you know. The differences in attenuation, delay in the phase shift, and things like that.
KG2R1.
Okay, David recognized. You know, I just think it's, a more of a semantical type of multipath tends to be used for RF kind of hitting hard objects and bouncing off of them, whereas most of the fading is going to be due to interactions with the ionosphere and the signals bifurcating off at different angles and producing all kinds of interesting interactions when they finally reach the Earth. Some of them will be out of phase and such. So I don't think you'd quite be right calling that multipath, although, you know, it could be a descriptive term that's very similar to what's going on. But, David, you wanted to say something on the subject?
Good evening. I have a question that's related to what you're talking about now. Something came into my mind. I think about the MFJ 1026 signal enhancer noise eliminator phasing signal with two antennas. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's a different thing. It's kind of off topic because when Gary is talking about QSB fading, and we're talking about interactions in the ionosphere giving you either a positive interference or negative interference, you're talking about a device with two different antennas, and then they try to null out the background noise by adjusting the phase of one of the signals and mix it together. So it's vaguely related to it, but it's not really what fading is about.
QSL.
That's UKW.
Yes, Alan.
It's not what fading is about, but with the two antennas, it's certainly what diversity is about. It's combining them out of phase to cancel out the interference. If you're combining them in phase, it would be an enhancement. It's pretty much what we were talking. It's not multipath, but it's certainly diversity, two antennas. You know, it doesn't have to be polarization diversity. You
could have space diversity as well, over.
Well, that's true, Alan, but that was a kind of a side comment because I find it fascinating to be able to hear Faraday rotation in real life and time. But, you know, principally, I think Gary was more interested in fading as a phenomena. Diversity reception is an interesting topic in and of itself. I have a Flex 6700. Unfortunately, their software doesn't really let you do clever things with the two signals, like adjusting phase and other characteristics. You could just pipe one audio into one ear and one audio into the other. Their earlier models that use different software have been improved to add all kinds of phase adjustments with diversity reception. But the 6700 has not yet received that tender, loving care.
Well, I know one fellow in the Republic of South Africa, single transmitter with a power divider, and he drives two amplifiers, two vertical antennas. Signal seems to be resistant to fading.
Okay, that's interesting. Gosh, two transmitters. Well, I would love to kind of read on. Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's really. I mean, it probably you can adjust the phase on each antenna and turn it into kind of a directional antenna, right?
No, not in his case. He's stuck with what he's got. It's a broadside array. And it's not two transmitters. It's one transmitter. It's amplifiers and two antennas.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure if that guarantees you no fade, but that's certainly an interesting configuration.
Well, you know, that's what ham radio is about. It's about experimenting. It seems to work for him. But then again, it's not real popular. He's the only one I know who does it.
Yeah, question for Alan, WB2BXO.
Okay, we tend to have... Echo Link is back on. Frank wanted, I think, to ask you, Alan, a question. So, Frank, if you're out there and you want to ask a question, well, let the repeater drop for a sec. Yeah, David, Frank, WB2BXO is on Echolink, and when people hit the carrier, he can't get onto Echolink. So we're giving him a little time to get onto Echolink.
Yeah, we doubled. Am I being heard now?
Yes, we hear you, Frank.
Okay. Yeah, two questions I'm curious about. I'm wondering if that's ZS6CCY that's doing that. The guy who's always ridiculously loud on 40 meters, I think, most of the time, at like almost any time of the day or night, it seems. And also, I'm curious as to a configuration like that would even be legal in the United States. It sounds like you're putting out two signals on the same band, even though I guess in a sense you're not, because it's one transmitter. Go ahead.
Okay. I think I know it's a two-letter suffix. It might be Bravo Kilo. I'd have to look at my log, but it's definitely not CCY. And you'll find him at his sunrise at the low end of 40 almost every day. And, yes, it would be legal in the United States. You're allowed to have 1.5 kW output. Or, actually, you're allowed to have 1.5 kW to the antenna. You could have any number of antennas and any number of amplifiers as long as you don't exceed an aggregate of 1.5 kW supplied to any and all. It's one transmitter, so it's one transmitted signal. It's just a distributed antenna.